From the Land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of November, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here to look at the cash grain market, and we'll talk about the weather forecast for the nation and the planet with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Along the way today, we'll hear from Lisa Braltz in her next In My Backyard segment, and I'll tell you about this morning's 771-acre farmland auction that took place in Bellflower. I wasn't there for the end of it, but I sure was for the beginning. It should be a great show on a Thursday afternoon here at Illinois Public Media. It is, of course, public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly lower. December contract for the soft red winter wheat at $8.45.5, down 3.25 today. The March at $8.61.25, 2.75 lower. And the May at $8.67.75, down 3. July soft red at $8.54.5, 4.25 lower. The hard red in Kansas City on a settlement price at $9.02.25, up 2.5 cents. All the wheat futures are in settlements, but the corn and the beans are just closes for the day. December contract $7.20.75 in the corn pit, down 5 cents. The March at $7.25, 4.25 lower. The May at $7.19.75, down 5.25. And July at $7.08.75, down 4.75. December contract on its close of next year at $6.06.5, down 2 cents. January soybeans, a closing price at $14.01, down 18 cents. The March at $13.85, 13.75 lower. The May contract at $13.63.25, down 14, and July at $13.56, down 10.25. November beans at $13 even, down 7.75. Bean meal futures, $3 lower at $3.64.5, or rather down $5.50 at $4.30.50, and the bean oil at $47.48, 19 cents lower. Live cattle futures, February contract at $129.37.5. up 25 cents. January feeders at $145.15, up 27.5. And February lean hogs, $86.15, up a dime on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, December contract, $85.45 a barrel, 86 cents lower. The RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, a penny and a half higher at $2.69.04. And ethanol in the spot month at $2.33.5. That's 0.8 cents lower for the day. The difference between the two or the spread is about 35.8 cents. That's 2.2 cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.70.03, up 5.7 cents. And heating oil at $2.97 is 1.8 cents lower for the day. Gold futures at $1,713.80 an ounce, down $16.30. And the dollar at 81.07. That's up 0.02 3 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area yet this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 48 degrees, partly cloudy this evening, a low of 29, sunny tomorrow and 53, and Friday evening mostly clear, a low of 30 degrees. Saturday, sunny skies and 53. Saturday night, clear and 32. Sunday, sunny and 53. Partly cloudy on Sunday evening at a low of 36. And Monday, sunny skies and 53 degrees. Monday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low of 41. And Tuesday, a chance of showers continues, mostly cloudy, and a high of 53. It'll be mostly cloudy Tuesday evening and 41. And Wednesday, sunny skies will come back to us, and we'll have a high near 56 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It is the 15th day of November. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. On the phone line from Mandeville, Louisiana, is Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, this morning I went out to Bellflower, which isn't too terribly far from Champaign-Urbana, and watched Murray Wise and Company auction off 771 acres. I had to leave before that was finished. But before they got through with it, I heard a couple of times that you were talking all about death crosses and some problems this morning in the marketplace. So we could talk about what there's kind of a difference in opinion here, because that land was at 10,113 on the 771 when I left, and it wasn't done yet. But you're talking about death crosses, so maybe you could bring those two into context for me.
Well, what I mean by death cross, these are moving averages that, of course, a lot of your black boxes and mechanical trading systems are a mix of moving averages of some kind. The guy that started all the moving average systems was Richard Dennis back in the early 80s when the first PC came about, and the Apple computer, and you could start calculating these long-term moving averages fairly quickly rather than by your old hand calculator. So ever since the early 80s, a lot of these moving average systems have been increasingly part of the technical mix. And there's probably a couple different definitions of a death cross. I personally use what I call as the 50-day and the 100-day. And when the 50-day moves underneath the 100-day, that is called a death cross. That is telling you that the long-term moving average trend, which had been higher at that point, has turned down. Now, the opposite of that is what you call as a golden cross. And a golden cross is when the 50-day moving average climbs above the 100-day moving average. Now, some people want to use like 100 and 200-day, but those get to be a little lengthy when you get into commodity forecasting and whatnot, because they're so long to make turns in that. And a lot of times by the time the term comes, maybe it's over with. But, yes, this last week on the lead futures contracts of corn, soybeans, and wheat, we all have the 50-day moving average moving down underneath the 100-day moving average. Now, it's also visible on your individual corn and soybean contracts, at least the front two, three, four, your old crop contracts. I'm not sure your new crop contracts have done it yet. Now, the wheat just quite hasn't done it yet. In any big on the individual contract. So wheat maybe still holds out some hope that it won't. But my guess is this big sideways market that we've had basically since we kind of posted fall lows. With the third is September crop report on East Corn, where we had a low of like 705 and we rallied pretty hard. And then we just kind of started trending sideways in this, 760 to 740 range. And then we've kind of broke down from that point. And that same way with November soybeans. They were trending sideways there for several weeks. And, a couple weeks ago I had talked about possibly a head and shoulder bottom formation. And then when that kind of gave way, I think the last time we talked, we said, well, we could maybe talk about a double bottom. We didn't even get a chance to talk about a double bottom. It sliced through that October low like warm butter. And basically what I see here is that the people were building long positions like me as a technician, looking at sideways action, anticipating some kind of seasonal recovery rally out of the harvest lows that would kick the moving averages all up to the upside, and we could maybe get a rally then going into Thanksgiving, and then that maybe could extend itself on into the January crop report. Well, the opposite happened. When the market failed to kick up from a seasonal perspective, and seasonally you should pull out of October lows. Mm-hmm. Soybeans have a tendency, once they pull out of an October low, they kind of keep grinding forward. They do show maybe a soft spot in the market during the late November, early December time frame. Corn has a tendency to maybe come back into early December for a test of that October low. But the lack of the failure of the market to move higher, fundamentally it could be a million things out there. It depends on which ones you want to argue. But I think a lot of it is long liquidation in front of turbulent economic times with the fiscal cliff. I think most people feel, regardless of what kind of agreement the politicians come up with, if they do come up with one on, 12:59 on New Year's Eve, it will include tax increases, capital gains tax increases, and everything. So what we're seeing here, I think you're going to see this more so in the equity market as well as index funds, is people are taking profits. They're going to bring income into this year, and we're getting into a liquidation phase clear across the board. And that has, I think, stimulated downward counter-seasonal pressures in commodities. It looks to me like the dollar is going to strengthen into the new year. That tells me that whatever happens in Washington, there ain't going to be any kind of agreement anytime soon to do anything meaningful. And it's basically safety. People are turning their assets into cash, buying the dollar, and they're buying bonds. So I think we kind of have a mini flight to quality move going on here in the commodity and equity complex because of the political situation that our politicians have got ourselves into.
Well, let me ask you this question. I suspect that it is simply rolled forward to some extent, the tail that should be the drop in the marketplace after a drought year, maybe, in your mind. I'm not sure about that. But does it offer an opportunity sometime in late January or February for a bounce back in the marketplace to take into account short supplies, in particular of corn, maybe not for soybean?
Sure. Basically, what I think this is doing, this death cross, it just kind of tells me that probably it's going to be very difficult to get any kind of rally or any kind of measurable, meaningful rally going in the complex until after the first of the year. So what we're going to have to do is find a level of stabilization and let the moving averages all kind of catch up to themselves, and then maybe sometime later this winter or early spring we could get a golden cross, which would then trigger a rally in the springtime frame, whether it would be the need to ration corn inventories. Maybe we get into weather problems in South America yet before it's over with, and we still may have weather problems here in the U.S. We're worried about not having enough water in the Mississippi River and the lower miss to actually move inventory down into the Gulf here for exports. We need some rain up north to fill up the rivers. And then the other thing is I think once this dollar does run its course on a rally, I'm a firm believer that at the end of the day, what we'll probably do is increase taxes for the next 2-3 years, and we'll postpone spending for 10 to 20 years. So I think politicians will figure out another way to kick the can down the road, and I think ultimately that means a weaker dollar and higher interest rates and all that kind of stuff. So, but in the short run here is flight to quality, because nobody knows what's going to happen with the divided government that we have, and that's putting downward pressure in commodities clear across the board. You can kind of see that even happening in the energies. Gold was down $16 here today. So in the stock market's down 51 after taking several 100 point drops. So this is the year-end liquidation. This is part of all about this fiscal cliff and what kind of tax policy we're going to have coming out of it.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan's
oh,
good.
Todd.
Yeah.
Before I let you leave, I wanted to razz you a little bit. Have you been watching my Aggies down here?
No.
Huh?
No.
With the Heisman Trophy candidate, Johnny Football?
No. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye, Dan.
Bye-bye.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM. I put him with ADM. He's not speaking of Razin. He's at CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Oh, Dan, he really threw me, you know, as well as I do. It's a Thursday afternoon.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, chuck wagons have been around at least 146 years. Ever since Texas rancher Charles Goodnight modified a Studebaker wagon in 1866. Lisa Brautz looks at the modern chuck wagon in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
I was very into American pioneer stories when I was a kid. I couldn't get enough of them. The crossing of rivers, the braving of blizzards, vast landscapes dotted with buffalo as people made their way further and further west throughout the 1800s. Unsurprisingly, I was also quite taken with the concept of the chuck wagon, which was either the part of the wagon train that was responsible for cooking for the pioneers on the move as they rode toward the frontier, or the wagon that traveled with and fed cowboys and ranchers as they drove cattle over long distances on the huge prairies. Chuck wagons started their trips fully loaded with food, then picked up supplies along the way and were the social centers for those on the trip, a place for everyone to come together twice a day. We still have a version of the chuck wagon with us, though it's not about feeding hungry settlers as they move west. Nowadays, the chuck wagon's descendants, food trucks, are all about feeding hungry passerby as they make their way to work or their next class or home from a night out.
All right, if I could have you sign this top copy here. And can I get a name for the order?
Jake.
Great, thanks, Jake. Here's your card to come.
Thank you.
While food trucks and carts and other vehicles have made a big splash in large metro areas, Urbana-Champaign has had a few mobile food enterprises call the U of I and Environs home for years. We've seen Daryl's truck on campus for decades, and Friar Tuck has parked in the southeast corner of Urbana's Market at the Square for well over 10 years. There was the guy that patrolled downtown Urbana with his hot dog cart for a year or two. And over the last couple of years, CU has been home to a few more food trucks, selling everything from burritos and tacos to Belgian street waffles to breakfast sandwiches. These trucks are actually fully loaded kitchens on wheels. Food isn't made somewhere else and warmed on these trucks. It's prepared to order while customers wait. One of these trucks is the Crack Truck, the realization of an idea three friends, Sean Baird, Daniel Krause, and Jeremy Mandel, were just kicking around a year ago when they were seniors at Southern Illinois University and the University of Illinois, majoring in food science and economics. They've been in business together since the end of July, selling their cheekily named breakfast sandwiches, Goy Vey, anyone? To eaters on the way to somewhere else. Like the other food trucks in the area, Cracked works with both the cities of Champaign and Urbana to ensure they're fully legal whenever they park. They have an arrangement with another local business to receive food shipments and wash dishes on their premises. And they appear at special events. In August, crack made their debut at Urbana's Market at the Square and were not ready for the response they received. Jeremy Mandel.
We had no idea what it meant to actually prep this truck to capacity.
Yeah.
At that point, it was, all right, we've got 10 hot dogs. All right, that should be good. And we got 25 patties. That looks about right. And we've got a few cases of it. And that was that. Now, obviously, we've been doing this for 3 months, which I'm sure is nothing in the scheme of things for other people. But now it's like, all right, let's literally fill this truck up. Every nook and cranny is going to have dry storage, or it's going to have frozen goods, or it's going to have refrigerated goods.
We have yet to run out.
Obviously, they've since worked out the kinks. Since Cracked is a small, independent business that's more nimble when it comes to working with suppliers, I asked if they worked at all with local food producers, both farmers and value-added food producers. And they do, sometimes. Although CU is a food-friendly town, the Cracked guys notice that students are primarily looking for convenience and value in their food, while the farmers market crowd is willing to wait in a longer line and pay a little more for an item featuring locally produced food.
We're open to doing local and to doing specials, and the market is a very great place to try that. People have been very receptive, and they love local food. That's why they're at the farmer's market, and they're willing to pay whatever it costs to buy a product that was, you know, raised organically or locally or free range.
Are food trucks serious competition for brick-and-mortar establishments? In CU, several food trucks belong to their parent restaurants, though this isn't the case with Cracked and a couple others. Trucks have to deal with the vagaries of the weather, often don't offer seating, and have limited menus compared with restaurants. Trucks like Cracked rely heavily on social media, which they handle themselves, word of mouth, and their own trucks as billboards to let people know they're around. But the final word, after all that, quality. Sean Baird.
Above and beyond all else, like, I think we have great food, and that's what's going to keep people coming back.
For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon from TGM. To take a look at the cash grain market, Matt Bennett is on the phone line. Matt, I was telling Dan Zwicker earlier that I was at the Murray Wise auction there in Bellflower. It was not done. 10,113 on 771 acres total. Well, of course, they were cut up in different tracks. I have to tell you, there was one track, 55 acres, that was $1,500 early on. And it stayed that way, actually, for a very long time. I was texting my brother, in fact, said, hey, we need to buy a farm. And after the 12th text, I kind of wondered, Matt, why he hadn't sent me any note back. And I got a text back. It said, I don't think this is who you think it is.
Maybe someone got a hot tip on a piece of ground.
Huh? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe so. Okay, tell me about hot tips for your area and basis, please.
Well, there's really not a whole lot going on. It's about as slow as can possibly be right now. It looks like we might be moving a few beans here and talking like the river basis. They're calling for maybe some of the lease contracts in some places, and I think it's going to be kind of interesting with this river thing. You know, there's going to be a lot of concern on whether barge traffic is actually going to be able to move very well as the year progresses if we don't have some sort of major precipitation. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see with basis. We really hadn't done anything for us in the last week.
Does it scare you, the drop in the marketplace at this point, or you think there's a turnaround somewhere?
Well, you know, there's just not a lot of people wanting to have their money in the market right now, it appears. And so, you know, does it scare me? You know, I think a lot of my guys, as far as their 12 crop, have gotten most everything priced that they really wanted to get priced. And as far as the 13 crop, yeah, I think this time of year is usually not the best time of year to forward sale, but I think I'd like to see a little bit of strengthening as we go through the end of the year and maybe the start of the year, especially insurance price time.
So continue on with me then. You know, it seems to me that producers have to be thinking at this point really about next year a lot, and you've suggested that they are. How far along do you think they need to be in sales?
Well, we were doing some stuff here about a month ago. And right now, there's still profitability if you look at the input costs. You know, obviously in given situations, maybe not for everyone, but for the majority of my customers, there's still some profit in selling fall corn of 13. So I think it needs to be looked at fairly closely. And as far as how far along they want to be, I'm always an advocate of getting several of their inputs paid for, especially whenever most guys have already got them bought. Because, you know, a lot of guys have gotten killed in the past by booking one side of this and not the other. So I'd like to see at least, you know, some of our inputs get paid for.
And what are your bids for the day?
Oh, bids for the day on corn, $7.24 for cash, $7.35 for Jan, $13.90 cash beans, and $14.05 for Jan.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us is Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about the third Thursday, because this is the third Thursday, and that means we have some updated forecasts from the National Weather Service.
Right. It's the 30-day forecast and the 90-day, and the 90-day this time happens to be the winter forecast, so we get a little bonus thrown in as a December, January, and February forecast. First of all, taking a look at the next 30 days, that's for the month of December, we've got the National Weather Service forecasting below normal temperatures. That's a switch across the northern tier of states from northern Idaho across the upper Midwest into the central Great Lakes. And we have below normal temperatures, below normal temperatures in that region, above normal temperatures across the southern tier from California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and the northern Gulf states. So the south above normal, the northern tier below normal, and presumably in between, which covers almost all of the Midwest except for the northern portions of the Midwest, equal chances, which mean about normal. As far as precipitation is concerned, equal chances most of the nation for the month of December, except for the Appalachians. We've got a broad band of above normal precipitation forecast from the Ohio River Valley in Arkansas and Tennessee, northeastward up the Ohio River and into the western Appalachians, and covering the southeastern third, almost the southeastern half of the Midwestern states. So we've got a wet pattern for December, and equal chances are presumably drier than normal most other places. Now, drier than normal is starting to get serious in some of the hard winter wheat belt. They have not had enough moisture, really, to get the crop emerged very well in the northern portions of hard winter wheat. That's from South Dakota down through Nebraska into northern Kansas. And we're running out of time to get that crop up and going before winter dormancy sets in. And the forecast, especially for the next 7 days, doesn't look very good for getting additional rain in those areas. It looks like it's going to stay dry, so that may be a story we'll be hearing about a little later this winter when we don't get that northern winter wheat emerged. The winter forecast is really sort of an extension of the first 30 days. For the total period, December, January, and February, we have below normal temperatures for North Dakota, northern South Dakota, Minnesota, down into northern Iowa, and the upper Great Lakes region. Those are the only below normal temperatures for most of the country, except for Florida. Florida is forecasting below normal temperatures for the winter months, and that's significant because this is the freeze season for some of the frost-sensitive crops they grow, particularly citrus crops, and so we'll be looking for that as a possible threat ahead for agricultural interest. Above normal temperatures for the entire southwestern third, almost the southwestern half of the country for December, January, and February, and we have precipitation above normal in the lower Mississippi Valley and below normal on the Pacific Coast.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us. We'll talk with you again next week.
My pleasure, Todd.
Agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt here on the Closing Market Report, and that wraps up this Thursday edition.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.